Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast. This is Ivan. I'm back in the seat, the in front of the microphone, whatever it's called. Joined as always by Bram and Nate. Yesterday, whatever the last game was, Tuesday. It's a long time between games. Kevin Durant and Sean Livingston both sat, and the Warriors still won by 30 or whatever it was. I think the main takeaway, well, I don't know if this is the case, but there's a couple takeaways. One, the Warriors are clearly better without Kevin Durant. I think that's been proven at this point. And what? Two, Pat McCaw is a future Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Discuss.
I mean, I think that Pat McCaw is better than Kevin Durant, obviously, is the takeaway from that.
That's well, we can definitely agree he's better than Harrison Barnes.
Oh, please.
You know, that thought actually went through my head the other night. I was actually watching the game. I was like, ah, Pat McCaw's so much better than Harrison Barnes. Almost tweeted it. And I was like, what are you even doing? Like, seriously, dude. Like,
dude, just... Matt Barnes is better than Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
You guys are stealing my role here on this podcast is usually the primary Barnes hater. Nate, how much of that is a joke, actually? And how much of it is...
What percentage of that is a joke?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because it's a silly statement. I have to say I still appreciate Barnes' versatility and his ability to defend fours. I think that was awesome. He got very good at shooting corner threes. I don't think McCall's a better ball handler. Like, McCall can handle the ball and make passes. I think we had this debate before. And one of you clowns was talking about how McCall doesn't do much with the ball or something.
Oh yeah, that was me. I had my anti McCall stance at that point.
Yeah, that was very disappointing. but I thought I actually think he's like, you know, I think I've seen growth as a player. He looks more confident in the court. We played him in a playoff game. He looks solid out there.
And you know, to kind of combine those first two joke points, that, you know, without KD they look fine, and they have, you know, for most of when he was out, haven't really needed that other player, that power forward, you know, small forward combo that Barnes is to, you know, to play defensively in those other lineups. Like, they've been kind of fine with Iguodala in that role, and you know, just having the all length team has been fine, and they haven't really missed a beat with McCaw in those lineups either. It's kind of amazing. I mean, you've got David West, who's just so much more now, a much more reliable backup big man than let's say Maurice Spates, who we all adore quite a bit. But, you know, he's West has just become this rock. He's always super solid. JaVale McGee has, you know, so much that he offers that they didn't really have last year from that position. He just it's like he's like strangely a difference maker. He's not very good, but he can change.
Oh, get out of here. I had a friend actually text me. Like, JaVale McGee is going to be the NBA Finals MVP. And also, that sentence rhymes in a way that makes me think that it might happen. Like, JaVale McGee is going to be the NBA Finals MVP.
That's insane.
Yeah. And, I mean, listen, if Iguodala could do it, he argued via text message. I was like, well, that's what I texted back. I was like, you are insane. And he was like, listen, man, Iguodala was an MVP. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know.
That's such a bizarre false equivalency, but...
I mean, yeah, let's not try to logic our way through it. But.
Well, no, but JaVale, he exceeds logic. He supersedes logic. He is to logic what Kryptonite is to Superman. And I think that JaVale has become like a very important part of the rotation of the Warriors is in and of itself like an amazing thing that we should embrace and adore and just sort of give its proper due in our society, because I think that I mean I'm all in for JaVale being like a productive member of a potential finals team.
Absolutely.
I sometimes wonder, like, we come on this pod and we say, like, we're kind of just BSing. We don't really plan anything in advance. And then Bram comes with a monologue like that. And, like, he planned that.
No, that was totally not planned. I was – listen, you brought up JaVale, and it reminded me of the fact that my buddy was, like, JaVale McGee, NBA Finals MVP. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And then the fact – and then in my mind, the only thing I planned was, like, oh, at some point I should, like, mention the fact that my buddy texted me that, you know.
Yeah.
But the rest of that is, I mean, you know, Nate, you know me. I don't live in a box. I live in a cloud, man. I live in a cloud of
That sounds about right. So the Warriors.
420, yes.
So yesterday the Warriors had a great game without Durant, and I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of that game, to be honest. But I know Nate, you were paying attention. How did they dominate the Blazers as much as they did? Like, what was the kind of key factor?
You know, remember last year, it's funny because I actually thought about this. You guys are really a part of my life now in ways that are amazing, this podcast.
Wow.
But
I wish that we weren't all in three different places, because I would hug you right now. That's the, yeah.
I remember last year, I think we talked about at one point, I want to say that how like the Blazers, they had like a game where they were just making crazy threes. Like people were like coming off the bench hitting threes. We were like, what the hell is happening here? And they won one game, right? I think like this year they're trying the same thing. They're doing I'm riffing off the 3-point thing. I think they're actually doing a really good job of trying to stop the transition threes. Like they're actually hustling back on defense and trying to do things that a lot of teams are not successful doing in transition, in terms of just crowding the 3-point line and making sure they account for Steph, which is, you know, it's about time that happened in the history of the basketball. But at the same time, like I still think they're trying to outshoot the Warriors, and I just don't think that's going to work. Like, yes, McCollum's awesome. Yes, Lillard's awesome. They're getting to the bucket. I thought Lillard kind of torched Thompson in the first quarter. Like he was just getting to the bucket whenever he wanted. But that nothing, they have nothing sustainable, and they can't stop the Warriors. They can't seem to account for all the shooters. And, you know, it kind of just like builds on itself. And after a while, like, yeah, they get kind of close. Like they were within 6 at one point in the first half, and then went to halftime was like 11, and it just keeps ballooning and ballooning and ballooning. And I just thought it was like a leaky, like they were kind of like a sieve after a while. And I don't think there's any answers for them. Like it would be interesting to bring the Blazers guys back on to see what they think in terms of answers to like slow
which
this down.
Also, just pointing out that neither of you were there for, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
No. I mean, you know.
Thanks. Well, whatever. We tried.
And I say how much you're in my thoughts and how much I appreciate you guys, and that's what I get. So. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I missed most of game one, so I don't know what game one looked like as much, but I mean, game two was just sort of like, it's just like the Blazers were clearly overmatched, and I don't think much more can be taken than that.
It's interesting to bring up Thompson against Lillard, and this is not trying to be a well actually, but this is reading a quote from Ethan Sherwood Strauss's piece, his gamer on game two. He mentioned that the Blazers shot 3 of 11 for 6 points when Klay Thompson was the primary defender. That only one of those 11 shots was not contested, which, you know, it sounds like Klay is locked in defensively. And then there was the hilarious quote from Draymond afterward when they asked him about a particular block that he had on Lillard. He said, that was pretty monstrous, and it was fitting that he got a 3 on the other end, because that's what Klay is all about. He's about getting his shots up. Like, well, well, you're supposed to be complimenting the guy's defense, and he somehow manages to take a shot at him.
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, again, I said in the first quarter, I mean, Lillard was like 4 for 5 for 8 points in the first 10 minutes of the game. I mean, and Clay was on him. Mm-hmm. So I hear what you're saying. Like, for the game, yeah, they contained him. But for the first quarter, Clay kind of, Lillard was hot, and then it just kind of fell apart on him. I guess that my point was that even when it looks like things are going well, like even if Lillard is 4 for 5 for 10 points or for 8 points early on, like nothing they have is sustainable against the Warriors.
Right.
They switch defenders, they switch schemes, they do something, and whatever they do seems to force the Blazers to fall apart. And I don't have easy answers for that. I don't know what Stotts is looking at right now after a game like that. And knowing, like you said, knowing the Warriors just like sat Livingston and Durant. I mean, what do you even like? What are you scheming for?
Funny because the way you describe how the Blazers were able to get that win last year is kind of in a way like the blueprint that Daryl Morey followed to construct this year's Rockets team, which is get as many three-point shooters as possible and increase variance on a game-to-game basis and just, like, hope that one day you outshoot them and, like, hope that you manage to outshoot the team 4 out of 7. It's, like, there's nothing really else you can do from like, a, you know, schematic point of view. Maybe there is. Clearly there is, as the Cavs did find something last year in how they treated Curry. But
that never happened.
Oh, right. I would love to rewrite history. That would be one of the things I would rewrite, and there are a number of others recently.
I would definitely start with some other events before doing that.
It would be top three for me.
Really?
No, not really.
I mean, can we talk about top three, or is that like wildly off topic?
Well, let's just stick with the topic.
Sorry, we're not going to do that. Yusuf Nurkic
talk about this off air.
Is supposed to come back tomorrow for game 3. He's been upgraded to doubtful, but it sounds like that's the expectation is that Nurkic is going to play, and obviously that's going to help them. Do either of you see, you know, significant changes in kind of how the Warriors have to play them defensively and you know, what they're going to do to counteract Nurkic in there?
So when Nurkic played, I think they were 14-6, if I remember correctly. It was something in that vicinity, and they were like 13-3 in their, you know, in their last 16 games or whatever it was. And Nurkic was playing amazing. Like, he really stepped into his role as being the third member of that big three with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and then him. And I mean, as far as the Warriors guarding him, to me, like, the biggest matchup before the series was I was hoping that Nurkic would come back. And then I was hoping that that Zaza Pachulia and Nurkic would tee off, because to me, that's like the ultimate like beast matchup of the playoffs. Like, I'm not sure if you're going to get any more like grindy than that. So I'm all in for the Pachulia versus Nurkic, just like grind fest. Although that sounds really bad, but you know, some people would be in for that as well.
I'd love to sit down at some point with like Adam Morris and maybe the Blazers guys and discuss like how Nurkic kind of went from the forgotten man to such a impactful player for the Blazers. Like, what was the difference maker between those two things?
So the difference maker is that he's the, you know, go-to like prime big man. And before, it was obvious that on Denver that Jokic, that he's like obviously much better and much more talented than Nurkic. But at the same time, like, Nurkic was pulling a huge pout move. Like, he was really upset by the fact that the Nuggets organization had chosen Jokic over him. And so he like literally was just like no showing games and no showing practices. And he was out of shape. Like, he was way overweight, you know, his weight ballooned to like 360 or something, where I think now he's playing at and again, this is just off the top of my head, but I think he's playing at like 320 or three, or maybe he's down to 280 or something.
He lost 100 pounds. It's amazing.
These are all things that we need to look up. So also, like, let me just preface this by saying, like, I do not know what I'm talking about. But it was some, like, it was,
we should probably just have that preface at the beginning of every podcast for really all three of us.
I'm no doctor, but I did read on the internet that he was 30 pounds overweight. So it wasn't 100 pounds, but it was like some 30 pound swing, you know? And so then when he got to the Trailblazers, then he got back in shape and he was the featured center. He was going to start. And apparently, like, that was the whole thing with him, is that he just wanted to start and he never was going to with the Nuggets. It's just crazy that Denver would make that trade, that they would send Nurkic over to their rival who's going against them for the eighth seed. And then they got Mason Plumlee back in the trade, and they sent a first rounder. I think it was Nurkic plus a first rounder for Mason Plumlee and a second rounder in 2018. Like, it wasn't even in this draft. And to me, that's an insane trade. I mean, I know that you need to get rid of Nurkic, and like, maybe the Trailblazers sort of like understood that and they were just nice and they like said all the right words. And then the Denver think tank was like, oh, this is going to work. But then Nurkic then turned around and they went, you know, they went 14-6. Like I said, I think they went before, and they took over the eighth seed and Denver's out of the playoffs. And, you know, again, like, it's good for them. They have Jokic, like, they're primed for greatness, hopefully in the future. They have this really interesting sort of business model that they're trying to follow. But at the same time, like, don't trade this intensely talented dude to your rival who then, like, because of his play, takes over your playoff seed, which you could sell all the playoff merchandise. You could sell all the playoff tickets. You, like, make millions of dollars off this stuff. And at the same time, you know, you also traded a number one, like a first round draft pick in the trade. And I don't know. That trade to me is crazy.
But I mean, in retrospect, sure. This is kind of why I was asking the question in the first place, is that if it was clear that Nurkic was going to be this much of an impact player, then, you know, why did they trade him? And like, it wasn't clear. He wasn't playing. He was, and maybe they thought he was going to pout forever, or he wasn't going to lose his 130 pounds that he lost. You know? So,
I think he lost 200 pounds to go down to like 375 is his playing weight. So he was like, I mean, you know, his father was a 500 pound bear who literally mauled an entire village. Right.
But I mean, and it was a pretty good trade for talent wise. Denver did get better. Plumlee was better than a pouting Nurkic.
He's not good.
Well, he fits better with Jokic, of course, than Nurkic was ever going to. Anyway, let's not talk about the Nuggets anymore. Just in that, it's odd to me that was kind of the difference maker. Is just him, like, okay, now he doesn't have to pout because he's getting this automatic start. Like, that's kind of a bummer. But it is interesting how much of an impact he was for the Blazers, and clearly they've missed him, and they've kind of grown, you know, reliant on him doing something different than anybody else on their team.
But anyways, I also agree. Like, screw the Nuggets; they're not in the playoffs. Let's talk about more relevant teams.
All right. Well, we can talk about the second round matchup of the Warriors, assuming that this Blazers Warriors matchup goes kind of as it has and as we expect. Durant or no, it seems clear that the Warriors should be able to move on to the next round. And the next round opponents will either be the Los Angeles Clippers or the Utah Jazz. And I think that it'll be interesting either way, but I want to talk about two things. One, which of those teams you guys would each rather see from a just purely from like who you think they're going to fare better against, and two, who you think would be more fun to watch them play against, like, just as a pure fan, who do you want to see them match up against between the Clippers and the Jazz? Nate, what do you think?
Clippers.
Wow.
I want them to play the Clippers. I want to give the Clippers that beat down.
So for both three, like both A and B, you want the Clippers because it'll be more entertaining watching them win 4-0.
Watching the Clippers pout through the entire series and flop around, and you know you'll probably get Mark Jackson will obviously be on every call, recalling the the last series, last time they played against each other, and the Donald Sterling thing. It'll be a circus, and I'll get tired of hearing Mark Jackson, but I want the Warriors to give the Clippers a beat down in the playoffs, and I want to, like, I don't even think it's a rivalry. I mean, do you guys consider it a rivalry?
No.
Yeah, I just hate them. I think they pout too much, and they're annoying. But like, I don't even think it's a rivalry anymore. I think it's just like, they're the bums from down south who whine, and I would thoroughly enjoy watching them lose. They still don't have a, for whatever reason, you know, various teams have like holes that are kind of persistent, like over the years. This small forward thing with the Clippers is just like, if you don't have wings that can consistently guard, that can consistently stay on the floor and be effective, you're not going to beat the Warriors. No matter what the Clippers do, they're not going to beat the Warriors. They just don't have, because for whatever reason, they cannot find wing play that's consistent enough to do so. And I don't want to hear about Austin Rivers having like a good quarter.
So the entertainment value for you is going to be purely in the beatdown. I mean, the other thing is like they've been kind of teetering on needing to just blow this thing up because they've clearly, like, they missed their window. They were never quite good enough for whatever reason. Like the pieces never quite fit together to get them over that hump. And I think it's probably done. Like, I think this is probably the last year that they can do it. And so if the Warriors are the ones to send them home in like explosive fashion, and then, like, you know, suddenly they're trading all their players and they're firing Doc Rivers, like, that'd be pretty spectacular.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, but that being said, like, I mean, I get that, and there would be a certain just fantastic sort of F you to the Clippers element of that I would totally stand for. But at the same time, I'm even further past you guys in the sense that, like, I so deeply do not care about the Clippers, and I so deeply hate that team that, like, I don't effing want to see them ever again. And I would way rather that the Warriors play the Jazz in the next series.
Okay.
Yeah, because that other stuff is still going to happen, right?
Yeah,
like,
and
the Clippers are just going to go, like, you know, disappear like dust in the wind, like, as soon as they get beat by whichever team beats them.
We'll and just, like, never have to think about it. I don't need to watch Chris Paul preen for the fucking cameras and, like, you know, sorry, language. I don't need to.
We can lift our language limitations for the Clippers and say whatever you need to.
Oh, don't give them that. Don't give them.
If you give me a green light for the Clippers, like, things are getting wild. Yeah. So here's what I have to say about the Clippers. I hate the fucking Clippers. The fucking Clippers are the worst team in the entire league, and they just go boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo all the time, and they look at the cameras, and they go for the fouls, and they fall over, and they make the dunks, and then they just lose all the time. And they just lose, and they lose, and they lose, and they lose. And it's glorious as they lose. And just, like, the more they lose, the more they lose. And it's just, like, it's a beautiful, like, butter churn event of just, like, Clippers angst and just, like, Doc Rivers sadness and just losing all the time. And so I'm all in for that. But at the same time, like, I don't want to waste my time because I have to cover these games. So I'm going to be watching them all the time. Like, I'd much rather watch the Jazz.
That was beautiful. Just a beautiful little soliloquy there. And I agree. The Jazz might be without Rudy Gobert, which is going to change things. I don't actually know what his timetable is. And it's huge for them. If they do lose to the Clippers, I would contend that would be the reason. I think they're a better team at this point. And especially against the Warriors, like Gobert is kind of one of the few difference makers at center, I think, that could actually kind of, you know, make the Warriors think, right? Like, change the way that they might play. I mean, they probably wouldn't, but it would be a factor. They'd have to game plan around it a little more than the usual, you know, center matchup situation that they're accustomed to taking advantage of. And so from that perspective, like I want to see that. I want to see more of it. It's a little scarier. That's certainly a harder matchup for them. And there's nothing easier than beating the Clippers at this point for the Warriors. But that's disappointing, that we're not going to see Gobert and that the Clippers might move on because of it.
I hear what both of you are saying about the Clippers. I still feel as though the Warriors could have beat them in that first round series a few years ago if they were healthy.
Yeah.
I know I'm pulling a Cavs fan thing on them, but I really believe that. I think there was a lot of emotion around that series. A lot of that was a crazy, crazy series. Like, the swings in the different point differentials in that series were just insane. It was like blowout, blowout, blowout. But I thought the Warriors could have won. It still kind of bothers me because I really wanted to.
Right, but the thing is, if they had won it, then Mark Jackson wouldn't have been fired.
Oh no,
I'm not sure that's actually not necessarily true because he had the rumor was that he had to get to the Western Conference Finals.
I don't know if it would even saved him. I mean, he didn't get fired because of it wasn't really because of his performance. It was because he was a crazy person that people didn't get along with.
Yeah, which honestly a very good reason to fire somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe the best reason to fire somebody.
Generally. Yeah, I don't think Mark Jackson was long for the Warriors regardless. But I don't know. I like seeing that team lose. And I like the Warriors being the one to beat them down. And that's just me. It's not about being the easier path. I want the toughest path. I mean, I want the Spurs. I want people to not use that as an excuse this year. And the Rockets are a good team too. But I just don't want any more excuses for why the Warriors deserve an asterisk next to their championship.
Yep.
Like, you know, put the Cavs in the Western Conference. Do what you need to do. Reincarnate the Showtime Blazers. Showtime Lakers. Whatever.
Showtime Blazers has a certain ring to it, though.
It does. That 99, yeah. That 91 Blazers team is pretty amazing.
All right, enough. Well, I wouldn't say enough hate. One other thing we wanted to talk about today, and coming back to the first thing that I mentioned so stupidly opening a podcast saying, "Are we bored?" There is a degree to which that feels true, and especially I think Andrew Flohr was at the game the other day, and noting that fans were leaving the game early in the fourth quarter. From Oracle for, you know, out of seats that they probably paid way too much money for. They left the game early because it was such a wild blowout. Damian Jones is getting fourth quarter minutes. You know, the stars weren't playing anymore. But there is this kind of fan ethos, like the true fan, like sticks through the game till the end, no matter what's happening. Whether they're, you know, whichever side of the blowout they're on. And I've always thought that, I've always been one of those guys who will stick around until the last whistle, the horn goes off, and then you stand around a little bit, just kind of looking at the confetti fly, and then, you know, and then finally filing your way into the masses and take, you know, an extra half an hour to get home, because you're stuck in people.
Well, more than that.
Probably more than half an hour. Yeah. And I'm kind of starting to care less about that. And I wanted to see how you guys felt, because there's, you know, there is a point at which, and maybe it's that point is when you get old, that being so principled about it, like, starts mattering less than like the practicalities of like life, of the rest of the stuff that you have to get on with doing. Nate, where do you stand on this? Cause I think I know where Rand is.
Yeah. I mean, I think age probably has something to do with it.
no doubt about that. But I also think, like, I mean, let's be real. Since last June, we've been waiting for the finals. I mean, I don't think that's unfair or, like, fanboyish to say. You lose the finals in the fashion that the Warriors lost the finals, and you're waiting to get back the second it ends. So this first round against a team that, you know, I think was clearly not going to win. I don't think there is – what was the stat that was on Twitter, like, before? Like, it was a 99.3% chance the Warriors were going to win this series. And then you get a 30-point blowout from Durant. I mean, yeah, it's just kind of like, okay, let's get on with this.
3-1, Nate. 3-1. Yeah. They had one of those 99% chances.
At some point. I don't want to hear about that.
Big news.
I did bring it up. But big news. But also, I think, you know, the reason I bring it up and the reason I think it's interesting is because as a Warriors fan, the fact, like, all those years I was hoping we could get to the playoffs and be blown out by the Lakers or somebody, you know, that we're finally here in the first round of the playoffs for the, you know, we're going to, you know, this looks like it's going to be a long string of playoff runs for the Warriors now. And, like, the playoffs come around and I'm still not that juiced. That's kind of, like, stunning to me to, like, when I'm self-monitoring. A little metacognitive there, but it, like, it's stunning that I'm like, wow, I'm really not that excited about this.
Well, that, yeah, I think a lot of fans are probably in the same situation, but even on the kind of micro level of, like, you're at the game, you've paid for these seats, it's super fun, you're watching this game, and then you're like, man, like, they are up by 30 and they're still kicking their butts. Like,
listen, if you have like a couple grand to drop on those seats, like, what does it matter?
Well, This is an interesting point to bring
up. That's how Oracle has changed. I mean,
well, it's true. The seats are cheaper now than they have been since 2013. You could actually get into that game. I know someone got into that game for like $125, which is, I don't know why they dropped this year, but they've, at least for the first round, they've dropped. So it's not quite as bad.
Right. But specifically, Andrew's video from the game was showing people in the lower bowl and specifically like courtside leaving.
Yeah.
And he said even on Twitter that the people in the upper bowl all stayed.
Yeah. Upper bowl, so, people stay.
Yeah. So it's like, it's the dudes who drop like an obscene amount of money. Like, all right, well, this is obviously in hand and now I have to go run my empire or whatever.
But
I have to go, like, meet my mistress or, you know, like, wow, whatever it is.
Okay. Wow. Impugning the character of rich people. How dare you?
I just don't – I don't know if – I mean, that's certainly part of it. I think that they care less, and they certainly care less about the value of the tickets that they paid for, because it's a smaller drop in the bucket. But like, I think that there's – I think it's okay. Like, I'm really, like, starting to think that the practical reasons for leaving early – actually are a factor, and they should be a factor for upper bowl people too, right? Like,
well, no, I mean, you can get out of the parking lot like 30 or 40 minutes faster. I mean, it's a night. Listen, if the Warriors are going to win, which they are in that game, like, you know, I hate to like stand behind these people who are leaving a playoff game, you know, especially given what we all went through with the We Believe and all this stuff where we never thought we'd make it to a playoff series. But like, at the same time, it's like, dude, I mean, those people, they got a lot of money. They got stuff to do. They got to go, you know, they got to go make decisions on things. And
come on. Oh man. What about those four upper bowl people? They got nothing to live for.
You're not going to win this one with Bram on your side.
I'm changing the whole story now. Like, oh, I'm staying till midnight. I don't know. Damn. My point that I'm trying to make is that it's like, for me, I would stay a game till the end out of principle. It was always like the principle. It was it was pride.
But is it principle like, based off of point, your like, love of the team, or is it principle based off of how much money you spent? I know, like,
I support my team down to the last player on the roster till the very end of the game.
Right. Well,
but there was always also a factor of like, man, I did pay for these seats. Like, I'm gonna get the most out of them. Like, I want to be there. Like, you know, before the game starts, I want to be there when.
Right. So Ivan, you have both. You have both the money that you spent, and then also the principle of the fact that you will support the team down to the end. But the fact is, like, these dudes who are sitting in the lower bowl, like money is not an issue to them. And they also don't care about the team. They're just like, they came in like 3 years ago and they're like, oh, this is fun. Or maybe their company gave them the tickets, you know? And it's like, Jesus. Oh, here, go sit here. Like, yeah, no, this, you're a big proponent of, you know, fracking or whatever they do, you Jeez. Know?
As someone who's done my fair share of sitting in the lower bowl, I would like to challenge that a little bit. I've never been near any fracking.
No, I know. That was a joke. Like, I mean, I know there's no fracking in California. I'm just saying.
It's not about fracking in California. My point is that, like, there are average Joes splitting those lower bowl tickets, those season ticket packages, right? So they're kind of like, you know, middle class people who are not just like super rich people who are kind of making it work, which is kind of awesome. I mean, I think I'm hitting my limit with Warriors tickets in terms of the justifying the cost, to be totally honest. That's kind of a sad moment for me.
How many games have you gone to this year?
This year I went to 4.
Yeah.
I mean,
and how much
way less than I've been in the past.
Yeah.
Way less. I mean, I've been, you know, 10 a year, you know, in addition to like the package, like I'll just pick up tickets sometime, but this is just like they're obscenely expensive. I agree, but at the same time, you know, you hear about people all the time, like randomly, like teachers, like, hey, I scored tickets to the Warriors game, I'm gonna go like next week or whatever, I saved up my last 3 years of salary to make this happen just for one beer, and I had to save another 6 for the tickets, you know, like it's, you know, people are making it happen because people do care about the team in the lower bowl. It's just a lot harder, and I think there are more, you are seeing the squeeze of people who are like the diehards who have been there for like, you know, 10 20 30 years. I mean, those real diehard fans are the ones being squeezed out because people have to share the tickets. You can't, like, going 41 games now, I mean, more power to the people who can afford those season tickets. They're obscenely priced. Like, I even if I had that money sitting in a savings account somewhere ready to go, it would be hard for me to justify.
Well, how much? I don't even know. Like, how much is it?
This year for the lower bowl, it was for 2 tickets, it was like $18,000.
For
the coming year, for 17-18.
Right.
That's a lot of money. And you know, and again, more power to the people who can afford that.
It's just, sports are so weird, man. It's like,
that I agree with.
Yeah, it's like people have money. They feel like they need to be seen at sporting events, or they need to like rub elbows with the superstars, or they need to like have that as part of their, you know, whatever thing that they do, which is like, oh yeah, I have a, you know, or they offer it to their business partners or like potential people. It's like, oh, well, I have a suite at the Oracle Arena, you know, here, like, by all means, like, here's these tickets to, you know, sit 3 rows back and whatever, have a meet and greet with Durant after the game. And it's just such a, I don't know, man, it's just such a weird thing that exists in that little subsect of America, which is just that, like, super rich people, and especially now with the Warriors, like super rich tech people are all about having access to the Warriors. And specifically, you can see it like through Iguodala. Like, Iguodala has a bunch of investments in a bunch of different companies. And like, Durant came here for, in large part, I think, because he wanted to like have access to these different companies. And you see these guys who are in the tech industry, and you see the people who are on the court. And it's just like, it's just such a weird amalgam of like, people interfacing with one another, and how the tickets get sold. And it's just like, it's never happened before. And it's something that is just really interesting to watch, that I don't know how that's going to play out, that, you know, the Warriors that we loved and knew, and the Joe Smith era, as much as you want to hate it, Nate, I know that you love it. That era of the Warriors is long gone, and it's a new world now. And they're moving to San Francisco, and it's, you know,
probably it might just take them being really bad to flip that script again. But it's very possible that the Warriors now and forever will be kind of in that same echelon as like the Knicks and the Lakers. It doesn't really matter how bad they are. The tickets are going to be expensive. People are going to go to games. They're going to get sponsorships, and they're going to get ad money. And that's.
I mean, unless the economy collapses, yeah.
Well,
I think we're out of time.
Right? I think we're out of time. If you're listening to this podcast in a browser, be sure to go and subscribe so that you don't have to do that anymore. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at Bram Kinchelow, at @NatePSBN, and at IvanBE. At Unstoppable Baby is the Golden State of Mind Twitter. Generally, we usually are doing some fun live tweeting of games, and other times we're just tweeting our articles. But then that makes it easy for you to read them. You can also check us out on Facebook, and Bram is on there all the time. Okay, that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you probably between game 4 and 5, if not sooner. But tune in next time to Golden State of Mindcast.
Okay.
'Napa Know-How. A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa Know-How. Napa Know-How.